Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Behind the Racket Pod, the podcast taking you behind the racket with today's top tennis players and biggest issues facing the sport.
Behind the Racket is a community to give fans and players in the world of tennis the opportunity to open up like they have never done before.
Visit BehindTheRacket.com for the latest stories, merch, as well as direct links to all of the latest podcasts. It can also be found on iTunes, Google Play, Pandora, Stitcher, and wherever you find your podcasts. Download the episodes and make sure to leave a review.
And we want you to be a part of the conversation. Find me at NoahRubin33 or Mike at MikeCTennis on all forms of social media. You can also learn more at BehindTheRacket.com or MikeCTennis.com.
Special thanks to my sponsor, New Balance. Visit their latest shoes and styles at NewBalance.com and learn more about their program of giving back at #NBGivesBack.
You can also help support the podcast by visiting patreon.com/behindtheracketpod and receive rewards from our travels around the world. And now.
Before we get started here today, a big thank you to our latest Patreon supporters, Noah. We have some more, believe it or not. People are actually paying, despite the fact that I have been doing nothing but teaching over the last week and you've been doing nothing but losing. So, I mean, all in all, I mean, I think it's remarkable that people continue to support us.
Okay. Quick dig there. Yeah, let me just bounce back for a second. I would pay a percentage of the Patreon money to figure out why they sent it and who it was actually for.
Sure.
To make you feel worse about you as a person, yeah.
No, listen, I have no... You have to remember, I actually know I'm not worth anything. That's really important.
It's not.
That's the thing. So thank you to Scott Cole, who has joined the Patreon team. We really should come up with like a name for the people who support.
No, they would. We would never. You get know, like welcome. Supporter.
Welcome to the BTR crew or something fun like that.
Yeah, I wish people could see your face right now.
Scott, thank you. And also our friend Lee Stanley, who I think you've interacted with him on. He did a, right after we released the podcast last week, he did a breakdown of the entire thing within like an hour, which I was grateful for. Lee Stanley increased his support of our Patreon. So Lee also, it's really only a British thing, I have to say, but he does the Twitter account Telly on Tennis. And it's only for Brits, which is really unfortunate because he basically breaks down where you can watch all of the British players playing every single day.
We need something like that.
We desperately need something like that. But I have incredible admiration for Lee. I also want to send my condolences. You were just holding a kitten, Noah. Our good friend Eric Janssen lost his 19-year-old cat yesterday. A 19-year-old cat. Yeah, remarkable. So Eric, I know Eric is having a rough day, and I've been texting back and forth with him a little bit, so my condolences out to him, and everybody who knows him on tennis Twitter knows how big of a supporter of especially challenger tennis he is. So thank you, patreon.com/behindtheracketpod. You can support us as well. So I'm texting back and forth with your lovely girlfriend, Jamie, the other day during your tennis match. And at one point in the middle of the second set, Noah, you yelled out, "Oh, we're having fun now." And I want to ask you to start today's podcast. Were you having fun?
Yeah, it was not the most ideal match to start off in the 6-month hiatus that I had. I went back and to return the first of, I was actually returning quite well in the beginning of the match, but
you really were,
but, to start like that, what I considered basically the first match of the new year, obviously being, a Jewish. Few days after Rosh Hashanah, of course, which, you know, yeah. as well, since you're part of the tribe.
Yes.
Yeah. Not ideal. we had 30 all point. And this is one of those things where you overthink it a little bit. At 30 all, when I had my first break, sliced it to the forehand, he clipped the tape, and then he went for a massive return at 30-40, and that broke back. And that quickly, I was like, oh, I wish that I could just continue some momentum here. And that really changed the mindset a little bit. But I was enjoying it. I was enjoying being out there. It was strange. There were so many strange aspects to it that, not good or bad, just very different. I mean, I know we talked about this a little bit, but never been to Europe during the fall seasons ever. Never that time. And to be on the clay felt different, new balls. I just enjoyed playing a match. I mean, again, not a lot of consistency going on in that court, and obviously gave up a few opportunities, and it was disappointing. But I think the only real disappointment was that I really couldn't go from there to a few tournaments in the U.S., and I'm still waiting to hear what that's looking like and this possible schedule, and I'm just hoping to end 2020 with just a couple more matches. That's really it right now.
I think once you went down in the second set, you went down a break.
Yeah.
And again, I watch you a little bit differently now than I say I would watch somebody who I don't necessarily know all that well. And I could tell once you went down that break, what was it, to 2-1, like there were probably 5 or 6 games where you are kind of on walkabout, just, you know, enjoying the sights and sounds and everything that was happening for a little bit of time. And you had looks at the very end. You had some opportunities, and I guess I'm wondering how you look back at it now in terms of how you do actually evaluate it. Do you evaluate it as a one-off? Do you evaluate it more on the technical side? Do you evaluate it more on the mental side?
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, you have to evaluate it first and foremost on the mental side. That's always a big one for me. No matter what, this will be so many different asterisks for me, because you're talking about coming into Paris during a time of year not used to, haven't played a match in 7 months, going in against Karlovic, whether he feels comfortable or not on those courts, whether he's 40 or 20. It's a tough match, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on me to make sure that I don't have any mental lapses. You know, I don't break down at all. And, you know, for somebody that hasn't played a match in a long time, that is a little bit to ask for. So you do evaluate on that. You evaluate how the competition was going, and then you take the next step and you look at it from a few different angles and you see how your game was playing. And, you know, again, I'm not saying my tennis is anywhere where I want it to be right now, but I do feel pretty good about it. I do think I returned fairly well at times against a pretty good server. And you do have to...
He underarm served you.
You...
Oh, my gosh.
Fucking idiot.
I was... I got to admit, I was a little wrecked when that happened.
So the first one happened. I just want to tell you, I was at a 33% winning percentage on underarm serves.
You were.
So the first one happens, and I am quick enough that I literally, like, it was in slow motion, and I had time to think about what was taking place. I evaluated the situation as a whole. Ivo Karlovic, him,
yeah,
underarm serve,
that
me,
man. Right.
All of it didn't make sense. And then I had time. I got up and I hit a forehand in the middle of the court because I didn't know what the fuck was going on. And he roped a forehand past me. And I was like, what? A deuce point. Deuce point, like, 2-all.
Yeah.
Because he was...
Noah, it was... I got to admit, it was sexy. Like, I was turned on.
Okay.
That was
amazing. I'm shutting this down right now because I can't on Twitter anymore. Not with me, just everybody. It can work once. Like, now that this is in people's heads, it works once. So like when I know you're laughing right now and I see you laughing, I am just, you have to agree that it is blown out of proportion. People should do it. Do it.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's a one-time thing.
Disagree. So does my man Sasha Bublik.
How many times is that guy doing in a match? He's doing it once a match.
84.
I'm sorry. What just happened?
I think you can get away with it two or three, depending on opponent. Opponent dependent.
I mean, I guess, what are you looking for? If you're looking for a neutral point, I think you could do it quite often. First of all, the Christian Garin one didn't make any sense. Yeah. I mean, it was like 4 inches away from him. I don't know how that was an ace.
Stop complaining. Stop complaining.
No, I'm just saying.
Get off your duff. What? Not you complaining. Oh. Christian Garin. He's just like,
I didn't understand the complaining. But again, people are going nuts over this. I'm just like, it's great. Try it. It's just not, you can't do it. And the people that can do it well, it's very tough. Like, to do a really good serve is like a, I would say Moutet probably has like a really good one.
Well, I watched some of him today. Oh man, was he was salty. Little bit salty today. He was not happy that, first off,
I missed it. What
he won his first set.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, his first set, he was not only kicking, God, who was he playing? Anyways, kicked the guy's ass, Spaniard, can't remember, kicked the guy's ass and was flirting with Mariana Valojevic, the chair umpire, flirting with her, like outright flirting with her.
What?
Lost the second set. Then it's pouring rain. He's screaming and yelling at everything because the clay is turned into Play-Doh. Lost his shit. I loved it. I enjoyed it so much.
Did he win the match?
They got suspended because of rain.
Oh, this was late. Tomorrow. This was late at night, or?
Yeah, last match of the day.
Gotcha.
So like 3 o'clock. Meanwhile, I'm on a group chat with the fantasy football boys. Okay. So I've got all these players and we're all talking about football and I'm like, am I the only one watching quarantine right now?
Yes. Yeah. Without you're probably the only human.
No, that's not true. There were five people in the stands.
Yes.
These balls, Noah.
Yes.
These balls are creating a lot of controversy.
Yeah.
Dan Evans saying that it's only fit for a dog.
Rafa, obviously. Lately, by the way.
I know. He's great. I don't know what he thinks about you, but he's
great.
No,
he probably doesn't. Or has an opinion.
What was it like to play with him?
Yeah. Preface, and this is something you don't hear often. I don't know many people, if any, that ever complained about the RG Babolat balls. I don't know one person that did. We all love them. Obviously, sponsorships, whatever the case may be. Switch to the Wilson. I will say, they fluff up like crazy and you can't get much off of them after a while. Mm. But I don't know why. Like, I'm thinking like to balls that I hated, like Oracle during that time. You heard a lot of people complain about them. My favorite line for a long time was I called them CVS balls. The ones that you find in the back stock room at CVS. They're like, tennis balls? We got them. Yeah. We'll get them.
Yeah, right.
But these, would I put them like so far down on the totem pole? No. I mean, for a lot of people are coming out of it. I just think people are in a bad place right now. We're seeing it. We're seeing how tough it is. And everybody likes to shit on me, which is easy. It's fine. And please do be my guest. And you do it as well. I mean, obviously.
Yeah, I do it well.
You do.
It's the one talent I have.
It's on your resume. But you know, it just seems like it's starting to affect people. I mean, you're seeing people that I don't think normally would come out and speak out about the cold and all of this.
Let me clarify then. Are you saying, because I could take that two ways.
Yeah.
Number one, is it, as somebody who's been in the Challengers for the last 4 or 5 years, you've seen, I mean, just kind of shitty conditions, shitty balls at times as well.
Yeah.
I mean, are you saying that maybe the top level guys are making more of a big deal of it because they're not used to that? Or are you saying that?
I think
something I actually said to my mom yesterday, people, when their insecurities and anxieties are amplified right now because of COVID, because of all the stress.
I wouldn't say it's the first one, 'cause there are definitely some tournaments. I mean, I remember like Hamburg or something like that, where it was like snowing. Like, they've dealt with shitty conditions before. I just think you put that on top of all the anxiety that's put on.
Okay.
What I think is the biggest issue right now for a lot of the players is the uncertainty. The uncertainty of all the rules going around, not knowing what works. I mean, God, we have to have a graph of pairs, positive and negative tests to find out when he's playing and when he's not playing. You know, it's, you know, that kind of pressure is something that we talk about a lot. Players deal with so much to add on to something and for something to be new and unexperienced. I think, you know, you're looking for these great conditions at a slam. You're always looking for the best, the pinnacle, but it's not going to come this year. And you add on that it's freezing cold and you're worrying about your physio testing positive and you're like, I can't get to my food and now it's raining. It's like all of that piles up on top of not getting perfect training and it's been 6 months off or whatever the case may be. And then you hear people that you don't really hear being outspoken speaking up. And that's where we are now.
So that brings me to what I wanted to talk about with relation to COVID.
Off the record or all of that. On the record?
No, we're going to talk about it on the record.
Cool.
I didn't know we do anything off the record here.
We should probably start. It's probably better for both of us if we do more things off the record.
I might actually get more work. Novak was trying to speak out about the fact that Fernando Verdasco didn't get a second test. Ernesto Escobedo, and you talked about that a little bit last week, that those players did not get a second test. Ellen Perez, a supporter of BTR and the podcast, she put out a poll, what's the worst rule situation that's happened going on, talked about the no second tests, you know, Benoit, all of that. And I thought actually one of the best responses was Gabby Dabrowski, who's been on the show before, who said, yeah, it's the no second chances, but right now the complete inconsistency. You as an ATP player received last week a letter, email from the ATP saying, hey, we know there's a lot of different stuff going on. It's been out there in the media, so it's on the record, so you don't have to worry about that. But basically, it was just saying, we know there's a lot of differences between tournaments, trying to work with the local health, you know, government, public health governments in each of these different countries, Noah. Is that realistic?
It's not. And people said, oh, you know, you're fighting governments, you can't win. I'm like, you can. You err on the side of caution. I don't know why we don't do that right now. I don't know why we can't err on the side of caution. Do I agree that, you know, I struggle to realize how we got to a point where this many people that have tested positive for the antibodies are now testing positive for COVID months and months and months later since they had COVID. You know, you have things like that where, you know, there should be testing protocols that are enforced by ATP that are okay for all governments. I don't know why we can't do it. I don't know why we can't have something that makes players feel comfortable that says, hey, this is what's going to happen for every tournament indefinitely. This is what's going to happen. Yes. I don't care. And you know, and I told Ernesto this, and I felt awful for him. And obviously we saw the Instagram stories. He was losing his mind. He like was set free. Like he was a circus animal. But if there is even one positive test, you can't argue it. You know, I don't think we're in a place, you know, where you can argue that right now. If you have to, because we don't have the time to do two negative tests ever after, that would be the only way I feel comfortable. And I know it's, and I know it's strange, because again, people are testing positive for antibodies and now testing positive for COVID, but we don't have the time. People are not, if you're going to do this, do it the right way. Nothing has made sense. You know, COVID is not new to us. We understand, and I'll finish it up here. We understand that, you know, it could take up to 14 days to contract it. And, you know, all of these days of quarantine, the 24-hour quarantine period, what does it even do? You know, I've never really understood any of these rules, and it just made no sense to me and put me in a place where we were just taking shots in the dark.
I would like to just be concise about this. When we were talking, we did a podcast where it was my rant, where I was talking about how all these exhibitions were just doing
their own thing. They're doing this thing.
We're doing that again.
Yeah.
Except now it's for real. What the fuck? somebody at the top say, listen, we appreciate that everybody's trying to do the best they can. Listen, you and I both know, we've been told specifically, we're all trying the best we can.
Yeah, yeah, we're doing
I was told that specifically at the U.S. Open by somebody. And let me just say, I respect that. I appreciate that. We need to make it the same. Every tournament has a here are the protocols. Here's what it is. Here's what it is. Here's what it is. For the rest of this calendar year, simple, done, and make it strict enough that you're comfortable with it. I understand the Australian Open, you know, they came out with what they're going to be doing here at the end of December and January. And that's a different story where there'll be a little bit of space, right? That's one thing. But for right now, everybody has to follow this rule set out by the ATP and the WTA. Boom. Do it or no tournaments.
Highlighting the idea that people are paving their own path. Federations are paving their own path. We've seen it before. And just an FYI, you don't have to say it. We're not doing the best we can. We're really not. I feel like we got to the 90 and we dropped the 90. That was good. That's how much I've been watching football lately. We got to the 10-yard line. We got to the 10-yard line and just dropped the ball. We've seen it all before. We saw it at the Open. They're not selling out hotels. We see it at the French Open. They're allowing people to go between the French and the practice courts by walking. This just happened. This wasn't during qualifying. They just started allowing this. I'm just like, we can't. Stop faking it. You know it's going to come out. Stop faking it. So if you're going to say, hey, players, we're going to do this, but at your own risk, I would actually almost appreciate that more. Mm. Tell me that I am risking the chance to get, and I'm not going to see my family because I'm not going to take that chance. Tell me it's at my own risk. And then I look at things differently. But you're telling me that this is safe to play, that you're trying to protect me. That's when I have the issues. That's when I uncover and I lift up the blanket and I'm like, whoa, that doesn't seem okay.
In hindsight, Noah, I think the U.S. Open for the rest of this year, at least, is going to be the pinnacle of what it is in terms of prevention and taking as many precautions as you can. I think the USTA and the U.S. Open are going to be the pinnacle in 2020 of what could or can be done to help limit the spread. I think that's where I'm going to start. Mm-hmm. I think that was incredibly well put because I think if everybody is going to be every man for themselves for the tournaments, if that's what you want, then you know what? You're exactly right. Say to players, don't know.
And then you let players on their own terms figure it out. That's the issue right now.
And what's unfortunate about that is like I do think about somebody like Serena Williams, who is more at risk. You know, and she doesn't play any tournaments. This is, I think, the first time in 6 years that she's played post U.S. Open. Yeah. And obviously it's for a slam, right? But I think about somebody like that or somebody in similar circumstances who might be lower ranked. Why would they take that risk? You know what I mean? Why would they take that risk? I also find myself thinking, listen, Fernando Verdasco is a name. Don't get me wrong. He's a name. Mm-hmm. But what if what happened with Fernando, what he believes is the false positive result, what if that happens to Novak? Right. What if that happens to Simona Halep?
Nadal at the French.
Christ, right?
Yeah.
Right, Nadal at the French. I mean, that's... all of this is just so inconsistent, and I think you're absolutely right. We either say, here is a standard for every tournament, this is what we're going to follow, these are the rules, or every man for themselves. Mm-hmm. You can't just try to go through the middle and say, we think we're doing the best we can.
On paper saying, that's the thing. Saying that quote and then me telling you you're not, this is why, these are the issues we're having. You know, and again, we've spoken about this, but this goes back to the same examples we've spoken about. It's this idea that tennis seems to be always 10 steps behind other sports, always forcing it, not really knowing what to do next. And it's scary. And if the people at the top of the sport can't see that when I'm getting these new advancements and the vision they have for the sport, I'm like, this doesn't change anything that we're dealing with right now. You don't have a vision to evolve the sport to put us in a place where we don't have to worry about these things.
And that's, you know, this is obviously a grander scale. I'm hoping we don't have another pandemic in our lifetime. But at the same point, you know, we're going to have this in much smaller scales, and we're going to have the same issues. So I think we have to wake up, because right now it's pretty embarrassing.
Did you have fun? I mean, legitimately, did you enjoy your experience?
I missed competing. I missed just like running down tennis balls. That was the problem. I mean, and Ernesto, please don't take this wrong, and I know you've just had a tough week, but like it was like the first time in a long time I was like super jealous. Because here I am playing doubles with him. He had the opportunity to play singles, and I'm just watching him compete. And of course I want him to win, but the jealousy of him being on the court and me not able to, ask him, I mean, you saw it for yourself, ask him how the practices went. The practices before, I was just trying to run down any ball he hit because I just wanted it so badly. So yes, it was enjoyable, and it made me really, really hope that there's a few more tournaments at the back end of the schedule. We'll see.
And what the USTA has announced officially so far are three women's events in Macon, Georgia, Tyler, Texas, Charleston, and then a couple of futures, some M15s and M25s in Florida and Texas is what they've officially announced so far here in the States. I have, in the last few days, in fact, again, I don't want to go too deep into the discussions, but that was a cat.
Yeah, clawed my face.
I just heard a cat there.
Sorry, keep going. just gonna just fix this wound on my neck for a second. Oh, cats. Okay, keep going.
I know, going back to our discussion about, you know, every man for themselves, in talking with my friends at the USTA Pro Circuit, I know they are doing everything they can to do things to the highest standard possible. And I am thankful for that personally. Again, everybody knows my connection with them. That's fine. I am so thankful that I feel like they are doing everything they possibly can to put us in the best possible shape. And that's probably why we might be lagging behind a little bit with all of, you know, so many of our friends are over in Europe right now playing in those events. But I know that that's why they're waiting until the middle of October, end of October to put these events on. That being said, I am teaching a 6-year-old right now, and teachers do not get paid enough, man.
Oh, my mom's gonna like that shout out.
Yeah.
Are you learning yourself at all?
You know, not yet. It's not quite to that level where there's things that I don't remember. I mean, this is very basic, you know, 10 minus 3.
6.
Yes. I mean, you did go to Wake Forest, which is a fake university. I'm pretty sure Wake Forest is equivalent to Trump U.
It was no UNC,
though.
I'm
pretty
though.
Sure it's...
We actually had to do I'm our pretty own sure work. It's the, oh, Lord. Shout out to Jamie Loeb.
I mean, like, I find myself thinking about, you know, like Will Blumberg, our friend, just recently announced that he's going back to North Carolina for his
12th year.
Year, I believe.
I feel like he's been in school forever. I'm sorry, Will.
Will Blumberg is a very talented player. Very. I actually talked to him a little bit, and he said, "Listen, I'm not going to have a lot of opportunities to play as a professional right now, so I'm going to go back to school." Will Blumberg at North Carolina has to have gotten like 6 degrees over those 5 years. I mean, because the schooling is so bad, like you should be able to have, he should have a PhD at this point.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to the University of Illinois, which has 3 people competing at the French Open tomorrow. 3.
Okay.
Not just 1 or 2, but 3. We have a Grand Slam champion.
Who?
We have a Grand Slam finalist and a guy making his main draw debut. I mean, really, what more do you want?
The worst part is...
Yeah,
I actually like the guys, so I can't really talk shit about them because I actually like them. You, on the other hand,
right?
How do you even get let into this school?
Well, it was a much different time. I mean, back in the 1960s, all you had to do was just know a guy. It's a different time. Do you pay more than $750 a year in taxes? Because I do. I
sure as hell do.
I really do. That's quite remarkable. I need a different accountant, apparently, than myself. Noah, what's you're in Minnesota?
Yeah.
You're playing with cats?
Yes. Yes, I am with my wonderful girlfriend that's sitting next to me right now. And no, I'm going to enjoy a few more days here. I do like to say I have an announcement coming soon, and I'm excited about it. You know a little bit about it. It's just a little. Yeah. But yeah, working on that and then hoping that we know better about the schedule and finishing that out. And that's about it. Picking some pumpkins.
We did that today. You coming to Tulsa to train?
No.
I'm the forehand. It's looking good.
Is it?
It's looking good, buddy.
But I want the backhand to be super. What? If it makes that sound, like that. We definitely have to talk further.
Well, the strings haven't been restrung in a year and a half.
Print synthetic from
literally from the
1960s. What a time! Oh god,
it's a great time to be alive.
This is one of our worst podcasts. Yeah,
some of our love.
Yeah, so there goes our Patreons. Yeah. Can you
delete the whole thing?
Yeah, or just start over.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Oh,
so this was. We'll end with this.
Okay.
This is a fun one.
Yeah. As you take.
So, when I got married, back in the day, then we went on a honeymoon where we basically did the entire West Coast. My now ex-wife and I started in Los Angeles, then drove to, she had a friend's wedding.
Okay.
And then we went to San Francisco. That was where really the honeymoon started. Right.
Okay.
And so, we had 2 days in San Francisco, Noah. We got to San Francisco and we parked in the hotel parking lot. I open the door and the first thing I see is a woman taking a poop behind a garbage can. That was literally the first thing I saw as I stepped out of my vehicle to start my honeymoon. Later that day, we went to Haight-Ashbury, the famous commune for hippies back in the late 60s, okay. 70s. Yeah. We're just walking down and trying to, you know, catch the vibe and everything. And then I saw a woman swearing at people on the street, and then she got hit by a bus.
Are you fucking kidding me?
None of that is false. That's all true.
Why are you telling me this now? Why?
Well,
ever?
I figured this is the worst podcast we've ever had.
So you had to end it.
So I figured I end it in like the worst possible way.
Nobody's gonna listen to us ever again.
That's fine. It's probably for the best, really.
We'll have a better one next week. We'll get a guest on.
Can we get a guest?
Yeah, it's been tough.
Yeah,
people are screaming and saying bad things.
To you or
to life?
All right, I'll just text somebody.
Okay, see ya.
Enjoy your time.
Yeah, apple picking.
The show might be over, but the conversation isn't. Join us on social media at NoahRubin33, at MikeCTennis, and at Behind the Racket.
Expect new episodes every Monday or Tuesday, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. It really helps us expand and reach more listeners as we take you behind the racket.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.